The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Today FM.
It all happens here.
Maybe let's cheer ourselves up to start with. It's always good to see somebody like Nigel Farage with egg on his face. We'll hear in a moment his birthday greeting to a fan. Sinead O'Carroll, editor of thejournal.ie, and Donal O'Donovan, managing director of Sanderson Recruitment, are with us. And Donal, tell us about what this grifter will do for money.
So Nigel Farage is on this app which is called Cameo. And it's basically where B-list, C-list, D-list, all the way down the alphabet celebrities will go on and record a personalised message for people. And he was on the app the other day. He got pranked, basically. Somebody paid €86 for him to record a message.
And don't give away the punchline.
Oh, dear.
You want
You're going
to
play it, aren't you?
We're going to play it because we'll play it for Nigel Farage. This is the birthday greeting that he made.
This message is for Brian Kelleher, Brexiteer, and I hope you have a great birthday. This comes from your good friend Aidan. Now, it's a bit early in the day, so all I've got actually is coffee, but I hope you enjoy a few pints with the lads tonight. Up the rah!
Sinead O'Carroll. I haven't heard that one since David Cullinan's celebrations and been elected as a Sinn Féin TD.
Whoever the Aidan is in that scenario, I'd say it's the best €86 that he has spent because it's just one of those things, as you introduced it, it lightens the moment. And I know, obviously, we can't laugh about it, the atrocities of the IRA and all of that, but it's just in a different space
to that. It's a bit like that Alan Partridge sketch where the singer started singing The Men Behind the Wire. It's got a touch of that about it.
It does. And I think because it's an in-joke, I think, for everybody in Ireland against this kind of big Brexiteer kind of... a lot standing for a lot of things that we don't like in Irish politics here, and so it kind of feels like an in-joke that we all got him. It wasn't just Aidan and his mate, it was kind of everybody.
But it's also how cheap he is as an individual selling birthday greetings.
Yeah, I wonder, like, €86 is actually quite cheap as well. I would have thought he might have been like, Matt, what would you do it for? Like, you'd be a well-known personality.
It's a business opportunity that I hadn't thought of maybe availing it. I don't know, I don't think so, gee. It is quite striking, though, isn't it? I mean, I thought he would have been on the after-dinner circuit in the UK, probably charging tens of thousands to men in pinstripe suits to listen to him.
You would have thought so, but I think he was questioned about it afterwards, and he said, look, these things happen all the time. He thought it was something very innocent, that there's lots of in-jokes in these things, and he didn't look into it. But I think it's a good prank. I totally agree. The content is very sensitive, but just for whoever that person was, they certainly got the viral reaction they were hoping
for. And
then
on the other side of it, like, people in Ireland have been saying for the last 5 years that British politicians don't understand Ireland, don't understand Northern Ireland. So the fact that he didn't actually know what the phrase is very telling in itself as well. And, you know, afterwards he said, well, I've got threats from the IRA. And he didn't know, you know, so that's how little kind of care and attention they have paid to Northern
Ireland. Something else that has got an enormous amount of attention, and lots of people have waded in to a row that has developed about a decision by Sally Rooney in relation to her latest book. Now, Sinead, can you actually clarify exactly what the situation is? Because I think the way this was first reported did not look good for Sally Rooney, but it was not entirely accurate what was reported.
Yeah, so initially we heard that she didn't want her latest book, her third book, to be translated into the Hebrew language because she was boycotting Israel. But that's not exactly what happened. She didn't want it. She didn't give the rights to an Israeli publisher who she believed didn't distance itself from the apartheid, what she says is the apartheid of Palestinians. So she has no problem with the book being translated into Hebrew. And that there's a big difference in those two things.
There is, because if she didn't want to translate into Hebrew, she would have been open to charges of anti-Semitism, which some people were very quick to lay at her door.
Yeah, and that would, like, there's a difference between a cultural boycott and you know, boycotting an entire language, and there is, you know, anti-Semite connotations to doing that with Hebrew. And so her statement did clarify, unfortunately, the statement was 24 hours after a lot of people had labelled her, and it is hard, like, it's hard to have these discussions around Israel and Palestine, and so many people are and so many countries are on one side or another, and a lot of nuance is lost. And then it leads to a lot of whataboutery. A lot of people have, you know, challenged her and said, well, if you care about this, why are you letting books be sold in China or, you know, other places? But I think it is up, every person and every author is allowed to have and take a stand on one issue that they care deeply about, that doesn't mean that they don't care about other things. But if this is something and she wants to stand by this BDS, which is the boycott movement, the Palestinian-led boycott movement, and it's something she feels strongly about, I think it's unfortunate for her, yeah, the way that the news was broken, because so many people hate the idea of her success, that anything that can challenge her on it, I think people like to jump at.
What did you make of it all, Donal?
Yeah, I thought it was. I didn't see the earlier report, so I thought when I saw this and I actually read her statement, I thought it was nice to see somebody that's been very successful. She's only 30 years of age and she's, you know, two bestsellers and the third one that looks set to follow the same route.
Oh, it's already outsold the first two, I think.
Which is amazing. And I just thought it was nice to see somebody put their principles ahead of their profit. So, yeah.
It didn't stop loads of people piling on, though, did it? I mean, did sort of predictable sources given out wanting to make capital out of it.
Yeah, and the Twitterati are always happy to have something
to
cling on
to. Or the Rod Littles of the Spectators of this world as well.
Yeah, but a lot of this comes down to, like, there is a huge discourse around Sally Rooney's success that people really, really, really love to try and dismiss it, diminish it, take it off her, take her talent off her. Like, I have read and enjoyed her books. I wouldn't say I'm a super fan, like, and I haven't read the third book yet as an example of that, but I don't see why people, I do see why people want to diminish her so quickly, and I think this gave them clout, or they believed it gave them clout to do that on a less personal level, and, you know, that actually, look over here, she's not as good as you all think she is. But I think her statement did clarify that, and I do think she is allowed to take a stand on one thing. It doesn't mean that you have to have an across-the-board approach. If we all did that, nothing would ever happen in the world.
As it happens, there is an audiobook of Beautiful World, Where Are You? And this is an extract, a brief extract, where Alex and Felix are on their first date.
The waitress from behind the bar had come out to mop down the empty tables with a cloth. The woman named Alice watched her for a few seconds and then looked at the man again. "So, what do people do for fun around here?" she asked.
"It's the same as any place. Few pubs around. Nightclub down in Ballinair. That's about 20 minutes in the car. And we have the amusements, obviously, but that's more for the kids. I suppose you don't really have friends around here yet, do you?"
"I think you're the first person I've had a conversation with since I moved in." He raised his eyebrows.
"Are you shy?" he said.
"You tell me."
I wonder what the Hebrew translation of that would sound like. All right, let's move on to something else which has been cancelled. Let's hear a bit of music. Let's hear a little bit of one of the Rolling Stones' most famous tracks from 1971. I don't know if we've broken any rules now by playing that, Donal O'Donovan, but the Rolling Stones will not be playing it on their latest tour.
Yeah, it's been dropped from the set list from the US tour. And it's, to be honest with you, until today, I've never actually listened or paid attention to the lyrics. I kind of thought it was about the condiments in bacon or something like that. But when I read them, I can see why it's caused issues. Some of the critics have said that it's some of the most stunningly crude and offensive lyrics that have ever been written. Gross, sexist and stunningly offensive towards black women. So it brings us back to the question of where do you draw the line between art, because the Rolling Stones have come out and they've been pretty coy about why they've dropped it, but they did say that the whole point of the song was to draw attention to the whole kind of story of slavery and so on
when you read the lyrics, did you see it as an anti-slavery song?
No, I saw it as kind of promoting it in quite a crass way, but I've listened to that. The song is from 1971. That's been in my listening, you know, for you know, my entire
They play it
life.
Apparently on every tour. They've never done a set without it.
Yeah,
until
it's
now,
their second
Sinead.
Biggest track, isn't it?
Yeah, so that's what Mick Jagger has said, that it's just time. He said, like, sure, we're going to drop it for this one and then we might bring it back in. So he's saying it's not to do with any controversy around the lyrics, although he has previously, years ago, said he wouldn't write that song again. I think that was back in the 90s he said that. So I think he is aware that times have changed and that's not the kind of art that he would put out now. What I find funny about these kind of stories is the the perpetually outraged at people being outraged. So people are, they're the Piers Morgans of the world.
Oh, he's
gone
nuts about this.
Completely outraged that this song has been dropped because he thinks it's, you know, people are pandering to the woke brigade. But he's the one who's actually outraged, whereas everyone else is like, the Rolling Stones, I don't know how many songs they have. I'm sure they'll put a set list together without one from 1971. And art changes, and I think there is a, like, there's obviously a very interesting academic discussion to have that we can have around all sorts of art, like whether what literature we still teach, how we teach it, what music we listen to. I think we can all listen to Brown Sugar if we want to and take what we need from it, and I don't think any of us should be cancelled for doing that. But that's different to playing it at a stadium. In that, like, if I was beside someone and it upset them, it's not going to make much of a difference to me if it's played or not. Whereas someone beside me, it might actually upset them. So, you know, let them win that argument. Find another song to play, or, you know, make new art. Like,
well, the listener says, I like the Stones, always have, but some of their lyrics are very dated. But the Piers Morgan argument, just for the sake of bringing it up, has been that much of the music that is made today is exceptionally offensive, and yet there's no stopping that actually been brought forward. It's things from the past that get cancelled.
I think probably people are as critical about, like, modern day music as they are about previous music. I think the difference is the ownership of it and who's singing it. I think he was making the point that a lot of rap music has offensive lyrics, but, you know, a lot of rap music is played up, is made by people of colour. So there's a big difference.
Does that make
difference.
It all right then to I'm have not sure if sexually makes offensive or potentially
no,
violent
and if
lyrics?
If you're talking about misogynistic lyrics, it, yeah, it doesn't make it okay if it's men singing them. But there is a difference between equating one thing and another when we're talking about a slavery, like slavery and black women. Like that, he's trying to equate two things that aren't the same.
Let's move on. After 5 o'clock, we will have Liam Herrick from the Irish Council of Civil Liberties with us. He's worried a little bit about vaccine shaming. And we had a case yesterday as well where Professor Philip Nolan was trying to encourage people with influence to get others to be vaccinated. But clearly, Donal O'Donoghue, that is not the case in Brazil, where the president is emphatic that he won't be getting a COVID-19 vaccine.
Yeah, I think this is a really piece of really bad leadership, I have to say. So Jair Bolsonaro, who's the president of Brazil, has said that he will not get vaccinated against COVID-19 because he's previously had it, and he would be the last Brazilian to do so. And I think it's little wonder when you look at the numbers in Brazil. Like, Brazil has had 600,000 COVID deaths, second only to the USA. And when you look at the leadership that was in place in both countries, both kind of far right and very anti-vax in their stances, it's pretty shocking.
What do you make of this, Sinead, as leadership goes?
Yeah, well, it's unsurprising with Bolsonaro, obviously, and he hasn't changed. And even when meeting other leaders, like we saw the pictures from New York that he was eating pizza when other people were in restaurants, more than likely because he couldn't get in without a vaccine pass. And leadership does, you know, trickle down. Like, if the leader of the country is anti-vax, it is going to be extremely hard for the public health doctors in that country and the cities who are trying to get people vaccinated. Like, some cities in Brazil do have vaccine passes, but Bolsonaro disagrees with them. So he said, like, freedom should come above all of these other things. So he is putting freedom above those 600,000 lives and saying, like, it doesn't matter. And he's also putting it out there that if you've had COVID, you don't need the vaccine, which isn't necessarily true. So obviously there is immunity if you have had COVID before.
But it only lasts for a particular period of time, which is why some people have ended up getting COVID twice.
Exactly. We've had our own story there the last couple of weeks with Callum Robinson, obviously telling us about that. So at the Irish footballer. So, you know, it's terrible leadership. It's unsurprising from the Brazilian president. But I think
back here in Ireland, though, was it good leadership of Philip Nolan to compare people who go to work when they have a sniffle or feeling a bit unwell to drunk driving? Was that a bit excessive? I mean, we had during the week Dublin City manager Owen Keegan having to apologise for upsetting students' unions with sarcastic comments about accommodation. But is that the way to influence people, do you think, Donal?
No, certainly not. And I think, look, I think we need to make sure that things are measured and they're relevant. And going back to the Brazilian piece, I think some of the misinformation he's put out around, you know, having had it and his level of immunity, and the other stuff that he put out around saying that the, you know, the Pfizer vaccine was going to turn people into crocodiles. Like, that's just bizarre stuff.
He said what?
He said that a byproduct of the Pfizer vaccine could turn people into crocodiles. Like, and that's leadership.
Yeah.
I just find it bizarre.
I think the seatbelt analogy is actually better than the drink driving one. I think the drink driving one, you're right, probably isn't a great analogy for public health doctors to be using, but they're obviously seeing it from a public health perspective. But I think the seatbelt one is probably a better one. When we brought in seatbelt rules, people were really against the idea of having to wear a seatbelt. And now your car kind of bleeps blue murder at you if you don't put it on.
But I suppose the seatbelt is largely personal responsibility, although somebody who's not...
You can't harm yourself. You can't harm others.
You can also harm others if you're not wearing a seatbelt and you can collide into them.
And that's the message that was stronger when it eventually got through to people. Like, I could actually hurt the people around me if we're in a crash. And like, I think that's the message that actually got through to people more about
seatbelts. Drink driving comes across as willful irresponsibility. And is that really the case for people who might feel, well, look, I've had my vaccinations, I've been off work for ages, I have to turn in for work. To make them feel like they've been criminalised as drink drivers was a bit excessive, wasn't it?
Yeah, but I think from a public health point of view, they are probably looking on, we actually have so many people vaccinated, this 10% who aren't vaccinated are so overrepresented in hospitals that actually they probably do. I can see why they're taking it that little bit further, because they can see the possible impact that 10% are going to have on hospitals, which will have huge knock-on effects for people's surgeries, for people's elective surgeries, for people's diagnostics. So I can see where Philip Nolan is coming from. I can also see the argument that it probably is a little bit too far for right now, because we need to actually encourage people of those 10% to get it rather than make them feel like criminals or make them feel like that they're being stupid. Because there will be people in that 10% who just maybe believe some misinformation or maybe just are a bit nervous. Like, and I think that's probably fair enough. If there's people out there who are still a little bit nervous, like, that is actually okay. Just, you know, we need to get to them with better information. People like Philip Nolan need to think about those people, I think, when they're messaging.
Okay, look, we'll be back with Liam Herrick about this a little bit later in the programme. But I want to look at Prince William. Is he really an influencer? If he speaks about climate, if he criticises billionaires, does it really matter? Let's hear what he said to BBC's newscast about the billionaire space race.
Now I've got children as well, and speaking to other parents, you know, it's a bit of a cliche, but you do start to see the world differently. And I want the things that I've enjoyed, the outdoor life and the sort of nature and the environment, I want that to still be there for not just my children, but everyone else's children. We need some of the world's greatest brains and minds fixed on trying to repair this planet, not trying to find the next place to go and live.
What do you make of that, Donal?
Oh, Prince William. Look, I thought it was pretty bizarre when I saw the William Shatner going to space and some of the nonsense he went on with when he came back down. I can see how there's a huge amount of money being spent on this. But I think fundamentally, the human race, we are wired to explore. And I don't think it needs to be an either or. I think it's really important that we've got COP26 going on, where there's going to be 197 nations coming together to try to take, you know, action rapidly in this regard. But I do think that we need to push our boundaries and explore, and, you know, I don't think it needs to be an either or, but I do think that Prince William has done what he needed to do in terms of bringing it to attention and getting some headlines from it.
And he's also getting into the space where Prince Harry is, I suppose, and getting enormous publicity for whatever he and Meghan say about things like this.
Yeah, and the Queen was caught on camera, and a rare kind of caught on camera thing this morning as well, saying like she wished leaders would do more rather than just talk more about climate change. So a rare kind of political statement from her, of even if it was accidental. I think with this, his kind of inference that some of the space race that's happening now between Musk and Bezos and Virgin is all just a bit unseemly, when there are such huge problems here that their money could be pumped into. Their argument is that space exploration does lead to huge discoveries and developments that we can use on Earth. And I think that is probably the case for some of what's happening. It's just a pity that's not happening at governmental level, at state level, so that these brilliant minds could actually work very specifically for the good of what's happening down here.
Thank you very much. Sinead O'Carroll, editor of thejournal.ie, and Donal O'Donoghue, managing director of Sanderson Recruitment, for being with us here on The Last Word at Today FM. We'll be back with a 5 of 5 after this.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Weekdays from 4:30. Today FM.